diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time. Welcome to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio, airing live on unceded Coast Salish territories in British Columbia, Canada. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only animal advocacy radio program, bringing you all you need to keep you up to date with what's happening locally and abroad, from interviews with amazing changemakers around the world to news, events, and lifestyle. Animal Voices can be heard live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and can also be streamed at cooperadio.org, or you can check out animalvoices.org for podcasts and any other information about the show after airing. Today we ask the question, can animal liberation truly be achieved with vegan consumerism? Has any social justice movement gained traction simply by consuming rather than calling out the oppression? I know this is a topic of much debate within the vegan and animal liberation communities, and we share an interview addressing this from Alyssa at the International Animal Rights Conference in Luxembourg with Garay Tezcan, where they discuss the matter further. And later on our show, we speak with Stephen Wiltshire, who along with his partner Diane Marsh have recently founded BC's newest and only, as far as I'm aware, multi-species farm animal sanctuary. I've been to the sanctuary and truly it is a piece of paradise. The animals all have such amazing bonds with each other and have the freedom to truly be themselves. We speak with Stephen about starting the sanctuary, his history with rescuing animals, and stories of some of the residents. To start off, however, I would just briefly like to discuss the day we call Thanksgiving. This day, which many of us see only as an annual holiday, a day off work, or a time to celebrate with a large feast, or more often as a time to give thanks. It seems that many have completely forgotten or never even learned of the genocide from which this day originates. The fact is that this holiday is in many ways a celebration of settler state and the genocide that many Aboriginal peoples went through at the hands of our ancestors. It is important that we at the very least take a moment during this holiday season to remember the suffering that was inflicted upon those in the country we live. And to remember that justice has not been achieved when police and systematic oppression still deeply affect those who truly have the rights to this land. And to remember that even though this is a history that seems so long ago, the wounds are still fresh for those who have suffered because of it, and that they continue to suffer to this day because of colonization. Enjoy your feast and time with your family, but take a moment to remember those who did not get the same opportunity. Think of not only the turkeys who suffer immensely this time of year, but also for all the Aboriginal peoples in our area to whom this is a memorial day, not a holiday.
Thanks for that, Jack.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Sorry to kind of kill the mood in the beginning of the show, but I feel that it's important to recognize that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it is coming up on Monday, so It's an important and timely thing to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So this past week, Maroon 5 released a video for their latest song, Animals. And we just wanted to take a moment to sort of talk about that because it's quite the kind of shocking video. We watched it together earlier. And I'll just read to you the first lines of the beginning of the song and also the chorus. Baby, I'm preying on you tonight, hunt you down, eat you alive. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell your scent for miles. So what did you guys think about the video that we just watched earlier. What were your sort of initial impressions with it?
I was appalled, frankly. I don't feel like I've had enough time to really fully process it. But right from the very beginning, it's just creepy and there was so much objectification, both of animals' bodies and of women, to a degree that was really disturbing to me.
Yeah, I don't know if I imagine that's not at all what they're going for, but I think most of us felt that within the first few. The video starts off with like a woman walking into a butcher shop to order some meat. And then Adam Levine's character is sort of this crazy stalker guy that takes a lot of pictures of her and follows her around. And he spends most of his time in a meat locker, like punching dead bodies of animals.
Yeah, and hugging dead animals' bodies.
Yeah, and just covering himself in blood and singing about how he's going to hunt her down. And it's just the juxtaposition of him with the meat and then looking at her and like fantasizing about her covered in blood and stuff like that. It really just sort of brought home the intersections of oppression, of how women are really just treated as pieces of meat and how oppressing.
Yeah, and I think actually, I know you think that that's not their intentions there, but it's pretty blatant that's
yeah, it's probably their intention to do it, but not as we're taking it, like where we're going, like, see.
That's no, I don't think I don't think they at all are recognizing that. And that's actually the really scary part, is that they are permitting this to go out to public and like be sexualizing this butcher who's like stalking this woman, like very aggressively stalking this woman and saying he's going to eat her alive, like and like a lot of, you know, insinuations of rape and stuff in the song and the video. Like that's and also, of course, the speciesism aspect, like he's he's objectifying, he's like hugging and like, you know, sexualizing these animal bodies. It's it's really disturbing video.
I found too that there was quite a bit of eroticization of violence in there. Yeah, you know,
definitely.
I think that their intention was probably to create sort of an artistic depiction of a kind of a scary scenario, and you know, whatever, just for artistic interest. But to me, you know, the way that it comes off is it's very much it's very much just eroticizing his stalking of her and the bloodiness, and you know, so that is super problematic to me.
And especially like in the culture we live in, where like I think it's like one out of every three women are experienced being stalked in their lifetime or something along those lines. Like,
yeah,
that's not a good move, Maroon 5.
Yeah, no. It's kind of like, I don't know, it just all seemed like such glorification, maybe just from the way that it's sort of highly produced and everything, but yeah, I think it's just a bad message to be putting out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and so I would like to talk about that more. I could talk about that probably for another hour or so, but unfortunately we do have to move on to our first interview, which is with Garai Tezcan, which Alyssa spoke to at the International Animal Rights Conference. Garai, along with several other activists in Turkey, collectively wrote a manifesto called Reckless Vegans, which is essentially just challenging the idea that vegan consumerism can achieve animal liberation. And it's just more discussing how to frame this as a social justice issue.
My name is Garai. I'm from Istanbul. I do activism in two different groups. One of them is mainly focusing on animal liberation. It's called Freedom to Earth. And the other one is called Food Not Bombs Istanbul chapter. So I'm in those two movements. But now the topic we will cover is called Restless Vegans, and it's not related to the groups I'm involved. So this Restless Vegans manifesto was an independent work. So group of people, like 10 to 15 people gathered, most of them were vegetarians or vegans. The topic was, okay, we are vegan or we want to be vegan, but let's criticize some points in it. The main motive to get this kind of meeting was that one of our friends actually received a Google Trend analysis and saw that in Turkish Google, so much entries and so much research have been done for the keyword vegan or veganism, but so few have been done for animal rights or animal liberation. So there was an obvious like contradiction, because most people go vegan because of animal ethics issues. This was like the drive that made us organize a discussion, and the following we wrote down a manifesto, and that's it, Restless Vegans. Basically, we are against vegans who are really happy and peaceful and don't have any problem with ongoing exploitations, because they, since they are vegan, they are exempt from those exploitations and they don't do anything further. So we wanted to criticize that in the first place.
Yeah, like so you were seeing that people see veganism as an end rather than a means to an end, and you're trying to address that issue. Why did you call it Restless Vegans?
It's actually a funny coincidence. In Turkey, some men who criticize other men started to call themselves restless men. It's another way to claim that they are pro-feminist. So we actually got the name from them. So we had restless men in Turkey. So we actually liked this naming, and we also wanted to use restless vegans. But we basically also influenced by feminist waves, because obviously last century saw many different feminist debates and actions, and eventually they didn't avoid from self-criticism, and with those self-criticisms they just evolved from second wave, and now they are talking about the third waves of feminism. So we called animal rights movement to second wave, because we saw that some practices and some way of doing politics is now not working that well. So in our opinion, first wave of animal liberation was like building vegetarian and vegan cultures respectively, which meant that like ethically rejection of products or services that exploit animals. So that was the political discourse, like go vegan, please go vegan, this is wrong, go vegan, which wasn't wrong. Okay, like yes, I went vegan because of the animal cause. I hope other people hopefully would go vegan. But the thing is, animal rights politics shouldn't be limited to go vegan thing, because eventually it refers to consumption habits. So the second wave of animal liberation, what we mean is like, okay, while we maintain and also promote vegan practices, we have to shift the trajectory of politics from consume this, not consume that, to active fight against whoever exploits animals. By that we mean, for example, undercover investigations into torture farms, or direct actions to, you know, sometimes save lives of those individuals, those kind of things. So this is not against being vegan, this is just completing what we mean by being vegan, okay? So that's what we meant. But the thing is, many big groups in animal rights still using the message, okay, you now saw the cruelty in egg farming, please go vegan. Okay, you now saw the milk industry, go vegan. Because still the politics of animal rights groups are around those kind of messages, that's why. And what we argue in the manifesto, moreover, is like animal liberation and being anti-oppression are theoretical causes, what we pushed us to turn into vegan, possibly. But veganism is the practical effect. We just thought, okay, we want animal liberation, we don't want any oppression in this world, then going vegan is an option. So that was the effect, that was a result. But right now, we argue that this effect of being vegan now began to overshadow the cause, which is being anti-oppression, because now many people identify themselves as vegan, and we think that this is a result of consumerist society, because people most of the time talk with you on table while eating something, and they always ask questions about, do you eat this? Oh, you don't eat that. Oh, you don't want to see that. You know, something like this. So when we hear so much questions about what we eat or what we use as a shampoo, whatever, then we acquire an identity which refers to our consumption habits. Okay, so that's some problem that is created by questions coming from consumerist society. So that means our vegan identity is in dialectics with consumerism. So we should challenge that. Instead, we should go back to our theoretical cause, which was liberation of all living beings, or which was maybe for some people being against all kinds of oppression, or for some people being against authority and hierarchy. So we should maybe change our identity, like I mean social identity, and we should articulate that, okay, I'm vegan, but I'm actually animal rights defender, or I'm actually animal liberation activist. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking now that it's not I am vegan. It's I practice veganism because of this bigger picture, because I'm anti-violence or anti-oppression. It's a practice. It's a means to an end, like I said.
It's a part of our political or ethical view, you know.
So you're, I think, suggesting that we are really put the focus on the fact that this is a social justice movement, and that's being forgotten. How long has this been out? Like,
actually, it's written in 2nd November 2013, just one day later than World Vegan Day. It's 1st of November. Yeah, it's only, I don't know, 10 months old, I think, or 11 months old.
You're criticizing veganism, something that's very dear to people, and people's identity, they identify as vegan. Yeah, so what kind of reaction have you been getting?
Well, actually, in the beginning of the text, we stress that, okay, this is criticism, but this is actually self-criticism too. So because people talking about this and writing this, they are not exempt from consumption culture. We are also part of it. So it is also self-criticism. It's something like we want to wake up, okay? So we didn't expect so bad reactions, because since we like stressed out in the beginning, this is self-criticism. But eventually we got a divided picture in Turkey. Like when this is posted in internet and also on Facebook, people who identify themselves more with the liberation activities and more radical stuff, they supported this text. But people who identify themselves only with vegan identity and like pure nonviolence, which Gary Francione mentions, like those people just hated this text because they thought this is a text calls people to do violent stuff, because Gary Francione and his followers, they just denounce even cage breaking, and they call it violence, which I cannot understand even if I come to 70 years old. Because okay, cage breaking might be a physical violence, but to whom? Because cage is not alive, and actual violence is happening to the living being living inside this cage. So I just cannot get it. But so those kind of people, yes, they didn't like it. From international reception, we got good things. We emailed to our activists all around the world. They just liked the idea. Some of them actually, I mean, honestly said that we didn't expect something from Turkey, because, you know, in the end, Turkey is like a follower country in animal rights, not a leading country. But this kind of like new ideas or like forward thinking, they didn't expect. But yeah, they liked it. And actually, a German group asked the permission to translate this into German. That made us proud, and we said, yes, just go on and do it. Yeah, right now it's in three languages, English, German, and Turkish. Hopefully, maybe one day it will be in French and Polish, whatever.
It's good to hear how it's doing, like a year later, and the effects of it. You go on to many examples of how veganism has holes in it, and how it doesn't stand in itself as a like a political treatise.
Well, one of the holes all restless vegans realized is that many vegans somehow forget that humans are animals. When they think that they reject all products and services coming from animal slavery, they just forgot products coming from human slavery. And that's still a reality in the world, even though like the Western countries are pretending to be great, having a great record on human rights, but their companies are still doing business in China, in Bangladesh, in Congo, in Sierra Leone. So maybe in boundaries of Western countries, not so much slavery. Okay, it's happening, but not much. So there is an illusion that Western countries are not allowing any slavery of humans. Whereas when you look at who's doing business with Bangladesh garment industry, Western companies, who's doing business in Sierra Leone with diamond mobs, Western companies. So that means that there is still slavery outside. There are still some slavery examples outside what vegans shun, I can say, you know. So, save diamonds. I doubt they are vegan because still most of them are blood diamonds. So, if there's blood of an animal or human, which is also animal, I don't think it's vegan. But if you open the dictionary, it says, okay, vegan is avoiding animal products and services. That's it. So it doesn't cover anything about human animal, okay? So that's a criticism. Or chocolate example. Like, people are looking for, okay, vegan chocolates. That's what I do too, but I'm always feeling bad. And I think I might stop, maybe, in the future. Because even if it's a vegan chocolate, the chocolate production includes slavery as well, you know? So I think, okay, does it include any milk? Is a question, important question for chocolate, but does it include any unpaid labor? Is another important question for anyone who argues that he or she is against slavery or exploitation. The boundaries of today's vegan practice is flawed, so we have to criticize it, and we have to criticize ourselves. We can just let it free for people who are following their hearts and who can decide themselves what's vegan or what's not. We shouldn't make a list of this is vegan, this is not, and we shouldn't like point fingers, but instead we should just put that people who call themselves vegan or people who call themselves animal rights activists are the ones who are against all kinds of exploitations, all kinds of slavery. When you say that, people can see themselves what includes slavery, what includes not. But if you just say vegan, then people just feel okay to use products that are coming from, human slavery. So, okay, yes, let's go on being vegan, but trajectory of politics and the discourse should be about anti-slavery, anti-oppression altogether. And always, like, taking action against those oppressors.
So that was Guray Tezcan. And this, he's an activist based in Turkey. This interview took place at the International Animal Rights Conference. To read the full 10-page document, search online for Restless Vegans Manifesto. We've also linked it to on our blog for today's show. And I just wanted to mention too, Guray brought up a very important point about chocolate, and you should check out Animal Voice's previous interview with the Food Empowerment Project, which was about a year and a half ago, I believe. But it was a great interview.
And you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 CFRO Cooperative Radio on unceded Coast Salish territories in Vancouver, BC, Canada. In animal and vegan events, we have tonight a Harmless Fun meetup at Meat on Main from 7:30 to 10 p.m. We'll be having a drinks and appetizer night, and I happen to be hosting it, so it's a little selfish to announce it, but you know. If you could please RSVP at meetup.com/harmlessfun if you are planning to join us. And Liberation BC is hosting its weekly chicken vigil in front of the Hallmark Poultry on the corner of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street tomorrow and every Saturday afternoon from noon to 2 p.m. As well tomorrow from noon to 2 p.m., Brooklyn Clothing protests are moving to Saturday afternoons for the winter. Brooklyn Clothing continues to sell Canada Goose jackets with coyote fur trim, so the protests will also continue. Brooklyn Clothing is located at 418 Davie Street, which is just one block west of the Yaletown Roundhouse Canada Line station, so it's very easy to get to. And this coming Monday, October 13th, join other compassionate souls at the fourth annual Vegan Thanks Living Potluck from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Oak Ridge SDA Hall. At 5350 Bailey Street, I think that's how you say that. It's B-A-I-L-L-I-E, a few blocks west of Canby Street near 37th Avenue. And Allison is actually producing that event. Did you want to talk about that, Allison?
Yeah, sure. So you just gave the basic details, yeah. Right? Because I was busy here. So So yes, please come to my Thanksgiving. It's the fourth year in a row that that it's being put on. Animal Voices is a proud co-sponsor, and I think many of us will be there as well. Everyone, so we had like 210 people go last year. There's going to be, I'm expecting that at least that many this year. We're going to have live musical entertainment again. I have two pianists who are going to be playing duets at the beginning, and Jenny Rempel, one of our co-hosts, is going to be there singing and playing guitar, and Sinead Sanders as well. So she's going to be singing, playing guitar, and providing that entertainment. There's going to be about 200 dishes there, because there's 200 people, so you won't go hungry. I also have 16 garden roasts that are being donated that I'm picking up today. So we'll have lots of yummy holiday roasts that are completely vegan, plant-based for people to eat. Just wanted to mention, oh, there's going to be an amazing raffle as well. I've got about 30 prizes, so you have a pretty good chance of winning if you buy a raffle ticket, which are really cheap. They're like $1 each, or six for $5. Just wanted to mention the co-sponsors too. As I said, Animal Voices is a co-sponsor. The Anti-Vivisection Society of BC is a co-sponsor. V-Dog, Vegan Dog Food. Me and You Body Deodorant is a co-sponsor. Laura Lee Shaw, Gardein. I think that's it. So yeah, so thank you to the co-sponsors. I couldn't do it without them, and I hope to see everyone there. That's Monday, 5:30 p.m. Bring a vegan dish, $5 at the door. Thank you very much.
Awesome. And then another thing that we're doing here at Animal Voices Radio is Jackie and I are collaborating on putting together a liberation talent show, which is going to be on Saturday, November 8th from 7:30 to 10 p.m. at Heartwood Cafe, which is on Broadway, right at like Broadway and Kingsway, where everything kind of intersects there. And we are still looking for performers. So did you want to sort of mention what we're looking for there, Jackie?
Sure. Honestly, it's super loose format. So if you've got a talent, contact us and we will fit you in somewhere. As long as it kind of loosely relates to the message of liberation, social justice, or animals in some way. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, you know, most talents can somehow be related as long as they're non-oppressive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're looking for a few talents still, and it's going to be a great event. We have already about 10 performers signed up right now. And, you know, we have some stand-up comedy, we have a lot of poetry readings happening, some musical performances, so it's going to be a great event with a lot of different variety.
Yeah, so definitely, even if you don't have a talent to share with us, please do come and check it out, because we want to get everybody there and just sort of share our artistic endeavors. And if you are interested in joining us as a performer, you can email radioanimalvoices@gmail.com for more information about that, and tell us what it is you're interested in doing.
Can I just say one quick thing? Mm-hmm. One sponsor that I forgot, Nature's Path, for the Compassionate Thanksgiving. I want to make sure all the sponsors get recognized, because they're all hugely appreciated, and they've done a great job as well. Thank you.
Awesome. And that's everything for events right now.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Do you want to know more about food? Who doesn't? Well, to learn about cooking, food sourcing, buying, selling, the politics of food, to know all these answers and other food-related questions, tune in every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we and our guests talk and talk about food. In fact, we're so busy talking about food, we don't even have time to eat it. Work up your appetite with Food Line Radio, 5 to 6 p.m. Tuesdays on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
So in Aldergrove, BC, Stephen Wiltshire, along with his partner Diane Marsh, have been rescuing farmed animals over the past few years. Recently, they've become an official sanctuary coined the Happy Herd Sanctuary, providing rescue, rehabilitation, and safe haven for farmed animals. The sanctuary provides a home to a wide variety of animals, from cows, chickens, to pigs and turkeys, and beyond. We have Stephen here today to speak with us about the sanctuary and some of its residents. Hello, Stephen, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you just officially became a sanctuary, but you have been rescuing farmed animals for a few years now. What led you to start rescuing these individuals?
I guess probably my partner Diane has always been rescuing animals way back, even 10 years ago, rescuing horses from slaughter and rehabilitating them. And that was, I guess that was our original exposure into rescuing animals. And about 5 years ago, we moved to a 4-acre property in Aldergrove that really didn't have any animals on it. We had our donkey, and we had a few chickens that Diane rescued, and just one by one, we started rescuing more farm animals. And friends in the activist community were offering to volunteer and trying to talk us into becoming an actual sanctuary, and we just over time decided that that's what we would become. And so I guess probably 2 weeks ago we came up with a name and a website and our Facebook page, and quite frankly I'm quite excited at the amount of support we've been getting. So that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's been quite amazing. I think you have over 500 likes now that when I last checked, which is amazing. You just started that page last week.
I think it started on Sunday, and about an hour ago, we had 620 likes.
Wow.
Just Facebook, and probably by next week our website will be up, and we'll have our Twitter account open. So I'm hoping that it's just going to continue to grow.
That's great. And I just want to move on to asking, so I asked you what started the rescuing, but you also mentioned animal activism. What led you in down that path?
I started late in life with activism, I guess. I probably 4 years ago, just on a whim, decided to go to Japan with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, where we were just documenting the dolphin slaughter. And I was there for about a month and basically came home a changed person. And that's, I guess, when we officially started rescuing farm animals, because it's a very easy thing to do. Animals are going to slaughter every day. And I just found it incredibly easy, because we had the property, to just go rescue a pig or go rescue a cow and bring it home. And,
so it's really grown. It's really grown since then.
It has. We have our cow Desi, he's almost 2 years now, and he's a Jersey cow that was literally on his way to slaughter when we got him. And a year later, we got two more cows. We have Scooter, who's a dairy cow that was on his way to become a veal cow. But quite frankly, he was so sick when we got him, I don't even think he would have survived a few days, because I don't believe he got any of his mother's milk. And he was suffering from pneumonia and had damage to his lungs. And so it probably took us about 2 months to nurse him back to health. And at the same time, we got another cow, a little Jersey cow, who I think he was lucky enough to be with his mom for a few days, because he was quite healthy. But again, he was on his way to be slaughtered. So we're quite happy to have them both, and we've had a lot of fun with them.
Mm-hmm. And they both seem to be doing really well now, I noticed when I was last there.
And they're both, yeah, Scooter's, he's very small for his age, but I think he always will be, but he seems mm-hmm. to be quite healthy now, so, as you can see.
Yeah, great. And since, like we were talking about earlier, Thanksgiving is this weekend, I feel it's fitting to talk a bit about Thomas the turkey.
Yeah.
I've been to your sanctuary a few times, and he's always the first one to welcome us and just has such character. What are some attributes about Thomas's personality that you think might surprise some people that have never gotten to know a turkey?
When you see Thomas, you don't know what to expect, because he's very big. He's very unique looking. His face is bright red and blue and white, and he puffs up his feathers when he sees you, and he spreads his tail, and he's actually welcoming you, because he's just happy to see you. He loves to flirt with people. He loves attention. So he'll approach you, and you're not sure what to make of him, but he's actually being being very friendly, and you can pet him, and he likes you to reach under his feathers and scratch his chest or his belly. And the day you're talking about, when I think we had maybe 10 people, a dozen people, he was just in his glory because he had so many people giving him attention. He didn't have to compete for attention. And yeah, he's just, and he comes when he's called. A funny thing, recently we rescued maybe, I think about 50 battery hens. And Thomas, for some reason, has decided that he wants to live with them. He's always lived out back with his female turkey, his girlfriend, Izzy. And when all these hens arrived about a month ago, they're in a little 10 by 10 chicken coop. He's just decided that they're his girlfriends, and he's gone in there every night at about 6 o'clock. He goes in and he sleeps with them, and it's very funny.
And if Thomas could speak English, what do you think he would say to humans who are planning on consuming turkey flesh this fall winter season?
I think he would just tell people that you have to educate yourself on the way turkeys are raised. Go on YouTube. The information's out there. The images are out there, and all you have to do is look at them. I've seen turkeys the way they've been raised. I've seen them being killed, and there's nothing humane about it. It's a terrible life that they live, and a terrible death that they have. I think we just have to make the connections with with Thanksgiving and what's on our plate and how these turkeys are treated. It's terrible.
And hopefully, go on. Sorry.
Sorry, and if you have the opportunity to visit with someone like Thomas, you'll see that they're incredibly intelligent. They're loving. They form friendships with people. They form friendships with other turkeys and chickens, and he's a great addition to the farm.
I was just going to actually recommend that if people wanted to actually get to know a turkey, they could come out to the Happy Herd Sanctuary and visit with Thomas and maybe be a bit surprised at what who he actually is as an individual.
Yeah, of course.
And what are some of your most memorable rescue stories?
I think it would have to be Thomas, actually, because he was the first. So we did have chickens before Thomas, and we did have a pig, but the first animal he was on his way to slaughter. He had been sold to a woman on Vancouver Island, who was going to, I think it was in the fall, so he was probably going to be a Thanksgiving turkey. And when I saw him, he was in a cage that he could barely fit in. He was just squished up in this little cage, and I felt really connected to him when I saw him, and I just made a commitment to myself that he wasn't going to be killed. And then I found out he was already sold, and I was devastated. So I had to find the seller. It was just a young farm kid from Aldergrove, and I had to outbid the lady that had already bought him just to bring Thomas home. And so yeah, he's my most memorable. They're all very meaningful, but I just think he was the one that I felt was he was at death's door, like he was on his way to be killed. So, and he turned out to be such a, I'd never had a turkey before, so he had turned out to be such a personality.
He certainly is. And you were recently, you mentioned earlier, you were recently involved in a moderate scale rescue of battery cage hens. Can you speak a bit about some of the behaviors that they had when you first rescued them and how they may have rehabilitated or changed due to life at the sanctuary?
Yeah, again, that's something I wish people could see, because when these hens arrive, some of them don't have feathers. Their feet, they've been in cages their entire life, and they're usually about a year and a half old. So their feet, fingernails, their claws, are all curled up. They're about 2-3 inches long, so they can't even stand up. And so they're in really rough shape when we get them. They're terrified of people. You pick them up and they try and get away. They flap their wings. And it takes about 3 weeks to a month of them actually being on grass and being treated with respect and being treated kindly, when you can see the change in their eyes. When they arrive, they have a crazed look in their eyes. And when you see them now, they're just happy. They have a very content look. Like, I see them every night when I put them to bed, you know, and they're all around Thomas the turkey, for example, and they're just very relaxed, and they're pecking and they're scratching in the sand and having dirt baths, doing things that chickens should do. So it's quite a difference from when they first arrived. So, and again, that's actually a very memorable rescue for me as well, because these chickens are, the day we get them, for example, we got 50 last time, they were on their way to slaughter. And unfortunately, the other 2,000 or 3,000 in that particular chicken barn went to slaughter, but 50 were able to be saved. So kind of bittersweet.
Yeah, you do what you can. And it sounds like also Thomas helped a bit with their adjustment to the sanctuary, which is awesome. That's the turkey power.
With these ones, he did.
Yeah.
He didn't with the other ones. He had no interest in the other hens, but for some reason, this group of hens, he decided that they were his friends.
Aw. And I've been to your sanctuary a few times, and there's always kind of this instant feeling of calm and peace upon entering the property and seeing all the animals coexisting so well and living, just like you mentioned, such a content life. What are some of the strongest cross-species friendships at the sanctuary?
I would have to say our cow, Desi, who we got in spring of 2013, and about, I don't know, less than a week later, we got a farm pig who was maybe 3 weeks old named Lucy. And we didn't know if they would be friends. And some of the videos that I've been posting on Facebook, and I will post, are just of the two of them meeting each other and becoming friends and playing right away and sleeping together right away. And they still do. Lucy's maybe 500 pounds and Desi's maybe 800 pounds, and they're still cuddled up at night in their stall. So I think that's, when we look at it now, it's not surprising, but I guess at the time it was, because we don't see it that often. But so does that answer your question?
Yes, that's no, great. But having been there, I would agree. They have a really strong bond, and they're both still, I think they still are very playful. They don't quite realize their size.
Yes.
And have you always felt this kind of connection or concern for non-human animals?
Well, like most people, I grew up with animals, and I guess as a child and a young man, I cared about dogs and horses, but I was eating other animals. So maybe, I guess the answer is no. I became a vegan late in life. I've only been vegan for barely 3 years now, so it just took a unique experience for me to make that connection with equating farm animals to dogs and horses and seeing them all as equally as important.
And I was just wondering, Stephen, how many animals do you have and which species?
Okay, just quickly, we have 3 cows, Desi, Scooter, and Sparky. We have 3 pigs. Percy's our oldest. He's about 13. And then Lucy, who's about a year and a half. Oh, sorry, Betty, who's probably about 4 years old. Then Lucy. And then we have Thomas the turkey. And we have Isabel the turkey. And we have Babe, or Baby the donkey, who we've had for about 12 years. Who's best friends with Betty the pig, by the way. And I'd have to recount our hens, but we probably have about 60 hens and 2 or 3 roosters. And 1 rooster that lives in our house, so.
Oh. Is that your alarm clock?
Well, unfortunately, when we decided she or he could live in the house, we didn't realize he was a rooster. So it was a different breed that who we heard, maybe I shouldn't say this on the air, but I guess I can. He fell off a delivery truck. or escaped off a delivery truck, and one of our neighbors had him for a couple of days and brought them over to our house. So, and it was a different breed, so the other chickens were really beating up on him. Oh. So we thought, okay, he can sleep in the bathtub for a few days, and then of course he would come out and sit on the chair with us, and we became very attached to him. And then about a month ago, he started crowing at about 4 a.m. So.
So he is your alarm clock. Whoops. Yeah. And I was just wondering, how big is the sanctuary?
It's 4 acres.
Okay. Great. And Stephen, what are your plans moving forward with the sanctuary?
Well, right now, I'm focusing on just exposure with social media. And we're going to just see what happens. And we have some property also that borders our acreage that may be coming available soon. So, and that was just under 6 acres. So we're really hoping that we can expand in the next year or two. And then we can get more pigs and more cows. And because our property right now, we may have room for maybe one more cow, but we're pretty much maxed out as far as the amount of animals we have, right?
And I assume with that expansion, you'll probably need some more help. What can people do to find out more or help out with Happy Herd?
Well, right now, find us on Facebook, like our page, the Happy Herd Farm Sanctuary. And probably next week, our website, thehappyherd.ca, will be up and running. It's going to be a really cool website. We've had a photographer come out twice now and take some really cool photos for the website. And it's going to be totally interactive. So I'm really looking forward to that. So they can contact us via our website or Facebook. And we're really looking forward to using some volunteers. We've had so many people expressing interest in volunteering on the farm. And so I guess last weekend was our first time that we had a group of people come out and actually do work. I've been a little bit shy to ask people to, even though they've been offering for about a year, I've been a little bit shy to actually taking them up on it. And I'm so glad I did, because just last Sunday, first of all, the amount of work we got done, but just the energy of having that many people working and having fun interacting with the animals. So I think that's something that we're going to move ahead with, and maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months, have a work party come out and continue doing that.
Yeah, I think that's so important, especially with sanctuaries, because often it can get to be a lot, and we need to support sanctuaries that are rescuing these farmed animals that we advocate for so much. Well, thanks so much, Stephen, for joining me today. That was a great interview.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I'll talk to you later about the Happy Herd, I'm sure.
All right, take care.
See ya. So that was Stephen Wiltshire of the Happy Herd Sanctuary. Please look up the Happy Herd Farm Sanctuary on Facebook to connect with them.
And now for the news. New research released last week reveals that vegetarianism is more popular than ever in the United Kingdom. Research group Mintel announced new statistics to coincide with World Vegetarian Day, revealing that 1 in 8 UK adults are now vegetarian or vegan, and that number increases to 1 in 5 for 16 to 24-year-olds. Wow. The humpback whale Cassiopeia has been sighted in Howe Sound. Over the past few weeks, the BC Cetacean Sightings Network has received many excited reports from boaters and residents in and around Howe Sound of humpback whales in the area. Thanks to a photo submitted by an observer on Bowen Island and the identification work by the Marine Education and Research Society, they've learned that at least some of these sightings are of a whale known as Cassiopeia. Cassiopeia is a whale that was first identified by the researchers at MERS in 2008 near northeastern Vancouver Island. Cassiopeia's sex is not known, but he or she has been seen in most years since in that area, and in 2013 was also spotted near Campbell River and in the Strait of Georgia. Unfortunately, the humpback whales that once used that area were all wiped out by commercial whaling in the early part of the 20th century. Thankfully, with the resurgence of humpback populations throughout the BC coast, sightings in Howe Sound and the surrounding Strait of Georgia are becoming more and more common, though still not near the levels of past years. Luckily, humpback whales on our coast are no longer threatened by whaling activity, but they still do face many threats. In a busy area like Howe Sound, vessel traffic with its accompanying potential for disturbance and ship strikes are a concern. If you are a boater, it is essential to use caution when using areas frequented by cetaceans like humpback whales, including Howe Sound.
Do you, like, is this part of their normal migration pattern, or why do you think we're seeing him or her in that area?
Oh, I honestly don't know.
No idea.
I recently read a book called The Oil Man and the Sea, and there were a few chapters in there about whale populations and how they kind of disappeared because of all the tanker traffic and stuff, but they've been starting to come back.
That's good.
Yeah, I guess they're sort of drifting back home.
We don't do any damage to them now.
Yeah, I hope not. I guess you could probably find out more information through the BC Cetacean Sightings Network or the Marine Education and Research Society. I think they both have websites.
Great.
Now, a new veggie burger has been developed that quote unquote bleeds like meat. This was interesting news this week. Yeah. The burger apparently is the brainchild of biochemistry professor Patrick Brown from Stanford University in the US, and it's now being manufactured by his food company, Impossible Foods. The secret ingredient is called heme, or plant blood, which is an organic molecule found in the protein leg hemoglobin, which is the plant version of hemoglobin. Heme creates flavors like the ones people taste in meat when it's exposed to sugars and amino acids. He told the Wall Street Journal that livestock is an antiquated technology. He said the system that we use today to produce meat and cheese is completely unsustainable. It has terribly destructive environmental consequences. His reports say that Brown's veggie patty is not quite there yet in terms of texture, but it's getting close. And at this point, each one costs about $20 to make. But Mr. Brown says he aims to create cheaper manufacturing processes, and the cost of raw materials will fall as scale increases. The Impossible Foods company has just announced that it's secured $75 million in venture capital, including cash from Bill Gates and Google Ventures. So Brown has every opportunity to perfect his veggie burger. And he says his target demographic is hardcore beef lovers.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, is this meant to gear towards vegetarians and vegans?
I don't think so. I think we're too interested in a bleeding
burger.
And I feel like online I've seen a lot of vegans sort of expressing revulsion at this idea.
Well, that's good if it reaches out to more people.
Yeah, that's my feeling too. I feel like
Other people interested.
Maybe it'll reach Adam Levine. Who knows?
Maybe. We can dream. And next up, the couple behind the controversial Thug Kitchen has canceled some of their Bay Area readings due to protest threats. If you're plugged into food culture at all on social media, you've likely heard about the controversy surrounding Thug Kitchen. The authors of the new expletive-ridden vegan cookbook, who also write a blog of the same name, came out from behind their anonymity last month to reveal themselves as Michelle Davis and Matt Holloway, a white couple from Hollywood. The resulting uproar around their racial identity, whether calling their book Thug Kitchen is racist or cultural appropriation, has led to protests all over the country. Maya Francis of VSB, which is verysmartbrothers.com, wrote that it goes without saying that thug is a loaded word, which in our politically correct post-racial society has become the polite way to say the N-word in mixed company. So the title that Holloway and Davis chose for their food blog is deliberate. So is The Voice. She continued saying the site's humor, of course, is to be found in the stark contrast to perceived thug culture and refinement, the crudeness of the language and the life it implies versus the sumptuous, wholesome home goodness of domestic success, end quote. Jezebel's Erin Gloria Ryan wrote similarly of the word thug, that it is recently most frequently associated with white people denigrating the black victims of violent crime. Richard Sherman of the Seattle Seahawks, famously christened a thug by some commentators after yelling about football during a post-game interview, famously said that thug is a new way to call somebody the N-word, she wrote. Incidentally, several vegan blogs, such as The Academic Abolitionist Vegan, have also weighed in on this issue. Protests were planned by vegan groups in the Bay Area against Thug Kitchen reading events that were scheduled on Wednesday of this week in Diesel Books in Oakland, and on Friday, that's today, at Omnivore Books in No Valley. The couple has since canceled these events.
Thanks for the news. So I just wanted to, before we go into the closing, just thank everyone who came out today. So thanks, Elise and Carissa, for joining me on the show, and Allison and Amir on the controls.
Hey.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
thanks for having us. And you have been listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 CFRO Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, BC, on unceded Coast Salish territories. On next week's show, we will talk to Demetrius Bagley, who is one of the producers of the acclaimed documentary Veducated, about the use of crowdfunding platforms such as Kickstarter and Indiegogo to raise funds to start vegan businesses, establish sanctuaries, or pay for campaigns and projects. Veducated raised over $40,000 of its $20,000 goal to launch the film, and Bagley has been monitoring and analyzing vegan crowdfunding efforts ever since. So he's sure to offer some great insights into this growing trend of community-based fundraising for projects that might not happen otherwise. You can keep connected with Animal Voices via Facebook, which you can just search for Animal Voices Vancouver, on Twitter, we're at Animal Voices YVR, or you can email us any suggestions or critical feedback that you have at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com if there's something you think we should cover. And you can also help keep us on the air by considering a donation to Animal Voices through coopradio.org. You can get a co-op membership, which does have some perks. There are some discounts, and just put Animal Voices as who you'd like your money to go towards. And please remember to be kind to the animals and stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith after this. And now we have a song called Sanctuary Song by Daniel Redwood.
You are someone, not something. You're welcome here with your broken wing or wounded leg or branded skin. This is your home now, come on in. You've known the pain, now feel the joy. What God has made, no man should destroy. From this day on, in the sun and rain, you can roam through these fields free again. Can run, jump, and play till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you a sanctuary song. It means as much to you as mine to me. I know that this is true. Your loving heart reaches out to mine, and the light in your eyes. The time, this is the place for us all to feel compassion's healing grace and pray for peace for all who share this one earthly home, so green, so fair. Where you can run, jump, and play
till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, yes, 'cause you are not alone. I wanna tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I wanna sing for you this sanctuary song. May the whole world sing for you. May the whole world be for you a sanctuary song.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independent like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. We are a non-commercial station bringing you voices and stories and perspectives you probably won't hear elsewhere. We are supported by members and by donations. You can become a member by going to our website at www.coopradio.org. If you like what you hear but don't want to be a member, that's cool too. You can still help by clicking on the donate arrow at the top right of the website. Co-op Radio thanks you for listening and for helping build our community of listeners and programmers.